Have you heard of the little church that could? Join Pastor Bob Enyart at Denver Bible Church for Sunday school at 9:30 a.m., worship service from 10:50 until noon, and our Sunday evening Bible study at 6 p.m. Located at Two Roads School at 7180 Oak Street in Arvada, Colorado. Join us on Sundays as we study the meat of the Word of God, to worship our awesome Creator and to equip the saints for the service of the Lord. Children are a blessing from God, but when parents reject and ignore His wisdom in teaching about parenting, children can grow up to be a curse to their parents and to the world around them. What does the Bible say about parents and children, education, and child discipline? Pastor Bob Enyart covers this powerful and critical topic in his teaching series, Raising Godly Children. Order by calling 800-8-ENYART or online at kgovstore.com.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
Fred, today we're going to look at a YouTube video. We'll link to it in our show summary, and it's about an octopus.
An octopus that vanishes.
It really does. Fred, this is a great video. And then we'll talk about articles out of the current Creation magazine like we've been doing about B.C. and A.D. before Christ, Anno Domini, about bears hibernating, about the planet Mercury, and maybe we'll have time for the Willamette Pine, and what is information all about anyway. So, Fred, can we start with this video? It's really short.
Yeah, let's do it. It's astonishing. This thing's awesome.
It's under a minute, and I don't even think the audience will hear any sound in the background, but we'll have to describe it. So who created this?
So we'll do the commentary. You can be the announcer. I'll be the color commentary.
Okay, good. So who took this footage of an octopus?
It's by Dr. Roger Hanlon from the Marine Biological Laboratory in Massachusetts.
So we'll start playing it. It's only 55 seconds long, and it starts out with, well, that's the opening screen telling us where it comes from. And then there's a plant. We see a plant underwater.
Yeah, a plant, a bush like
a marine plant. There's fish swimming
fish
around.
Swimming around it.
The bottom of the sea. And there's...
Oh, what is that?
There's a monster! It's a one-eyed monster. It's
one-eyed
an
monster.
Octopus.
Just spit off a bunch of ink.
Now, Fred, this is stunning because this plant, it just looks like a plant, and it's moving in the water currents.
Yeah, the water currents. Imagine snorkeling and looking at this thing. You'd have no idea that there was some creature attached to this
thing. You're looking at a little plant, maybe the size of a potted plant on somebody's desk. Actually, it'd have to be a lot bigger than that, like a little bush.
Yeah, it looks like maybe about a 3-foot-tall, 4-foot-tall bush.
At most, yeah. And so there's a little bush on the floor of the sea. And it just looks like the branches of the bush, but lo and behold, there's a good-sized octopus on the bush.
Suddenly it appears. You can see its big black eye.
It was camouflage.
Camouflage.
And it appears out of nowhere. And then it takes off, and it shoots out its black squid ink. Well, it's octopus ink in this
octopus
case.
Octopus ink. How old is that ink?
It's remember that? There's ink. The BBC said this ink is millions of years old in this fossil squid, and lo and behold, you could still paint with it. And so, yeah, it didn't break down. It was still – all they had to do was add water or ammonia or whatever, and it's still ink. And so, Fred – this, now he's going to show it in reverse, right?
So continue the video. It's going to show a slow motion reverse.
Okay. So
here it goes.
Here we go. Now you're going to have to go to realsciencefriday.com to see this. There's an octopus, and it looks like a monster with its 8 legs and its big eye, right?
Yeah. And so right now you can see the shape and pattern. The shape's getting a little smaller.
It wraps itself around like a quarter of the plant, and it starts to disappear. It disappeared, Fred.
Color, brightness, texture, everything. And it's just disappeared into the plant.
It's absorbed into the plant. It looks like the plant has branches that are moving in the water and the little leaves, and it just disappears. Even its big, monstrous eye.
You can't see the eye anymore.
Disappears.
Everything is camouflaged.
The whole octopus disappears. It's a stunning thing to see. Now, how does it happen?
Okay. Good question.
Creation Magazine has a great article on this. You found this video. Thank you for finding that, Fred. It turns out that this is even more amazing than it seems.
Yeah, their skin can see, right, in a sense.
Well, the octopus itself, does it have color vision?
Well, let's think about that. If this was to evolve, he'd have to kind of know what color to turn into, right? Because this plant underwater is like a green texture.
Yeah, like so if you had a Broncos symbol underwater or a Broncos helmet.
You turn into the horse and the blue and the orange?
Yeah, right. I guess
well,
so.
What's really interesting about this creature that we just learned here was that they're colorblind. They discovered that these creatures are actually colorblind, and yet they can change color, texture, brightness in just a matter of seconds. I mean, it's remarkable how quickly this happens.
In 1 to 2 seconds. Now, on land, we have chameleons that we're somewhat more familiar with because we also live on land. And they change their color based on hormones that travel through their blood system. That takes a while. Well, cephalopods that are squid, octopus, cuttlefish, they change color almost immediately, like within 1 or 2 seconds. And it happens because it's a nervous system change. It's not hormones going through their blood system.
Circulatory and again, system. Their skin has a sort of light-sensitive protein similar to their eye. They do this even though being colorblind, it's amazing. They don't know what colors they need to produce, yet they've got skin that have light-sensitive proteins similar to the eye to aid in this transformation.
So, Fred, you know, I used to work for McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company, and I think about the military and their use of camouflage and high technology to do that better and better. And I used to think, all right, you have a personnel carrier, and you pull it off the road, and you're up somewhere, and it's against a forest. And on one side of the vehicle, you'd have some type of a display screen, like a material, a fabric that actually is a screen. And on the other side, you have little cameras. And so the cameras show you what's on the other side of the vehicle. And the screen on the opposite side shows the trees, the branches, the rocks, the tree trunks, whatever. And it sort of looks like this vehicle blends in with the image.
Well, that would be all fine and dandy if you're looking right at it at the right angle. But what happens when you come off at like
another angle?
30-degree angle.
It wouldn't look right, right?
Yeah, then you'd notice it.
Maybe you could get more and more sophisticated, maybe. So it turns out that the octopus, apparently in this video, does the same thing that he has. You're telling me that he has cells in his skin that can detect the color that they're facing?
And then produce that same color and just blend in like it disappears. I mean, it really didn't disappear, but it sure looks like it. You have to go see the video at kgov.com, realsciencefriday.com,
right?
It disappeared. It's gone.
It went invisible. I mean, it's just a stunning video. So here's a colorblind octopus, and its skin can see the color. And apparently, you know, we can't see the side of the octopus that's touching the plant, but I would think it's probably not even wasting energy by turning that side of it the right color.
Well, you know, men have already reverse engineered this. I've seen it in a movie on Star Trek, a cloaking device.
Oh, that's right.
The Romulan ship just disappears.
The Romulans, they can do it, can't they? So this octopus, his skin senses, all right, this is a part of the branch of this plant. This is a part of the leaf. This is a part where you can see through the plant because there's nothing there and you're seeing the rest of the sea floor. So the skin on the plant side of the octopus is telling the skin on the other side of the animal which color to display.
And again, it does it in a 3D fashion. I mean, it doesn't matter what angle you're looking at this.
It's going to look right.
So it's a little bit more superior than the invention that you were talking about at your helicopter company.
Whoa. And so here.
Nothing personal there, Bob.
No, that's fine. Yeah, the Lord is quite an engineer. And of course, the U.S. Office of Naval Research is funding the study of these things to figure out how do they do it. And they're not quite done yet. They want to know, for one, does the brain get involved? Or is this directly a function of the skin and the nervous system?
Yeah, so they haven't figured that part out yet.
Right. Does the octopus even have to think about it? They don't know yet. You know what's interesting? When a colorblind creature can camouflage itself perfectly with color, Fred, this is just related indirectly, but it makes me think of pain and how we say that we sense pain in our brain. And I think really it's in our mind. But you sense pain not in your foot. Like if you burn your foot, you step on hot coals, maybe because you're some kind of cultist nut. You step on hot coals, you burn your foot, and your foot hurts. But really, the pain isn't felt in your foot, really, is it?
No, it's felt in the mind, right?
Yeah. And
so how does that work?
Well, have you ever seen or heard when someone has their leg amputated and days later they feel a terrible pain or a Charlie horse in their toes?
In their foot.
And the nurse says, yeah, but I can't rub your foot. You don't have a foot. So it's a phantom pain. And that, among other evidences, show us that the pain is in the brain or in the mind. But what's so fascinating about that is when brain surgeons operate and they cut through your skin and your scalp, that might hurt a little. But then when they get to your brain, what happens?
They don't really put you under when they're operating on your brain. They don't need to because you don't feel the pain.
Right. They don't put you under a full anesthesia, not even a local, because your brain doesn't sense pain. And how could it be? God is so inscrutable. He's so amazing. How could he make us so that the organ that helps us sense pain doesn't feel pain? And they just cut and whack away. One of the young boys at our church, we were at the hospital, a children's hospital in Denver just recently. He had about 10 tremors a day, and they removed a chunk of his brain about a couple inches long.
Wow.
And just by his left ear, and he is fully recovered, and he's gone to zero tremors a day. So it was just
does that regenerate at all? Or
No. Okay. I don't believe. I mean, maybe with stem cell therapy it could, adult stem cells. But no, but they figured out, they tested him, and they did, you know, music and math and creativity, and that part of his brain was not being used for any of these communication functions. So they determined that they should be able to remove that and not harm him in any noticeable way. And they did, and they were right. And that was where his tremors were originating.
Wow. Okay.
But your brain doesn't feel pain. And yet that's what God designed us for, our pain understanding to come through our brain.
Well, you know, my brain feels pain when I look at this next article.
Okay.
So, in Australia, they've got a new national school curriculum. They're kind of copying what England did.
Yeah.
Where they're going to remove the BC and AD terms, you know, before Christ and Anno Domini.
Oh, yeah. The year of our
from
Lord.
Their, yeah. From the curriculum.
Christ. They don't like that, huh?
Yeah. I wonder why that is.
And what are they replacing it with?
Well,
because that's a dilemma they have.
Yeah. So they have to replace them. They're replacing them with BCE, which is before Common Era, and CE, which is Common Era.
Now, Creation Magazine, they do a good job with this because they quote the Archbishop of Sydney, a Dr. Peter Jensen, and a Dr. Michael Nazir Ali, a former Bishop of Rochester. And Ali says, look, whether you use Common Era or Anno Domini, the date is actually the same, and the reference point is still the birth of Christ.
Yeah, so that doesn't change. They can't change that.
And it's like
historically, it'll still be the birth of Christ.
Right. It's like they're tricking the students, because Dr. Peter Jensen, the Archbishop of Sydney, points out, he says that this is an intellectually absurd attempt to write Christ out of human history, because the coming of Christ remains the central point of dating, and because the phrase Common Era is meaningless and misleading. And what a good point he has there, Fred, right? All these young skulls full of mush, they go to school, and they're told this is the Common Era. Well, what does that mean? What makes it the Common Era? What? 10 years after Jesus was born, and before Jesus was born, it was not the Common Era? What are they talking about?
Yeah, so before, what delineates before Common Era and Common Era?
Yeah, what made it Common Era? And the funny thing is, God, if something profane is common. Well, Jesus Christ, they will take his name and use it as profanity, common, but he is holy.
Yeah.
So you can't get around the truth of the Creator and Christ's birth and his death and resurrection as the culmination of the battle between good and evil in human history.
Yeah, they're trying to write him out of history in this curriculum, but they can't do it. That's central point in history.
Yeah. It's okay. And we have a seven-day week because God created in 6 days, rested on the seventh, and we take off Sundays, most countries in the world, because the world, even in its rebellion, remembers that Jesus Christ rose on the first day of the week, on Sunday.
That's right. So the next article we have is about bears, and then after that we'll talk about the Minnesota Vikings and the Detroit Lions. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Okay, so hibernating bears.
How about them bears?
Yeah. So researchers have made the unexpected discovery that when black bears hibernate, they lower their body temperature only slightly. But what's interesting is their metabolic activity drops dramatically, slowing to about 25% of normal.
25%, and they stay hibernated for months. And, Fred, this was much lower than researchers had imagined could even be possible, because bears spend about half the year, and they don't eat, and they don't drink. But when they emerge from their dens, what kind of condition are they afterward?
Well, they emerge in pretty much the same condition they were before they entered into the den.
Which is stunning. How could it be that you don't lose muscle and bone mass, hardly any at all, in 5, 6, 7 months, Fred, even, over such a long time of immobility, disuse, and here the bears emerge fit and trim and strong?
Man, you just imagine me getting up in the morning. Wow, that's
yeah, right.
I'm not the same as I went when I went to bed.
For me, after just 3.5 hours sleep, I'm a mess. So, Fred, it turns out that there are 9 orders of mammals that hibernate. 9 orders of mammals. For God to be able to demonstrate his creative engineering is so awesome, because we have seasons. And for some animals, it's hard to survive through the winter months.
Yeah, so what about the ark? I mean, we could have had some hibernating occurring on the ark, right?
Mm-hmm.
The length of the flood was a year. Did they hibernate for a year, or did they even need to? We don't know for sure, right?
We don't know, and there was plenty of food and water on the ark. But with not being able to move all that much, get around, could be a lot of the animals did hibernate for a good amount of time.
Yeah, make life easier on Noah.
Poor old Noah.
Yeah.
And his sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and the daughter-in-laws, who were objecting the most.
That's right.
We didn't know we signed up for this. What are we? Who's going to deal with that elephant over there? Did you know that elephant was pregnant?
You know, Bob, I went bear hunting once.
Yeah.
I had a GPS device, and it told me, you know, turn left here, this and that. It finally said bear left, so I went home.
Oh, Fred. Bear left. All right. That is amazing how they can hibernate and slow down to 25% of their normal metabolic activity. Wow.
Yep. So the next one is Mercury. Do you remember the spacecraft they launched? I don't know. It's about 10 years ago. The Messenger.
Oh, yeah.
The Messenger spacecraft.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? It's sending back information from Mercury that's totally surprising to the evolutionists.
Surprising. And it so often is. And quite often, when they're shocked, we say, well, that makes a lot of sense.
That's right.
But this craft is orbiting Mercury. And Fred, it's telling us a few things. One, it revealed that Mercury has had epic lava flows, and that this lava has covered vast areas of the surface of Mercury, and that it was once molten rock. And you know what's interesting? Normally, what would they say? They'd say, and this took place over millions of years.
Millions of years.
They would normally say that, and then we would have to find the evidence that they made that up, and it was something that could happen quickly. Well, they saved us some work this time, because they said, based on the way the lava apparently related to the underlying surface, they say it must have flowed rapidly. Researchers at Brown University have, and we're talking about planetary geoscientists, said, we can't say, this is a verbatim quote, we can't say if it took 3 days or 15 years or any exact time, but it wasn't hundreds of millions of years. So they're saying, hey,
honest admission,
this happened rapidly, and we have a list of not so old things on our Real Science Friday website. Fred, we update this every year. Lord willing, we'll be doing this again in January 2012.
Yeah, our annual not-so-old things show.
Yeah, and it's so much fun to look at things that evolutionists and atheists would normally say, well, it would take millions of years or billions of years, and lo and behold, these are things that are not so old.
That's right. So they also discovered that Mercury has a lot more sulfur than Earth, like 10 times as much.
Mm.
So it's not made up of the things they quite expected.
Yeah,
in fact, they said it was from a different mix of a lot of building blocks than the other planets.
Yeah, than the terrestrial planets that are close in as compared to the gas giants.
Yep.
And, Fred, this is interesting because the standard planetary origins model is that these terrestrial planets, they should all be very similar in their makeup. But when Larry Nittler, a cosmochemist involved in analyzing the Mercury data, says our work is showing that at some level, Mercury formed from a different mix of building blocks than did the other terrestrial planets. That's pretty cool because God is the one who mixed the ingredients to decide what the planets would be composed of and the moon and the stars and how he wanted them to be made for his enjoyment.
That's right. So, again, it was a big surprise to them that they found this mix.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something else that was a surprise, now this is to politicians, is, Bob, you want to buy a tree?
Oh, do I want to buy a tree? Well, didn't the government in Australia destroy a lot of trees?
Yeah, there was a state government that wanted to sell wallaby pines. You know, wallaby pines is that tree they thought was millions of years old.
65 million years old.
65 million years old and long since extinct.
Because it's with the dinosaurs,
right? That's
right.
A dinosaur tree. But lo and behold, they found some growing.
Yeah.
And so it's what they call a living fossil. So they thought, hey, man, people are going to really want to buy this tree.
They're going to want to buy it because it's 65 million years old.
That's right.
Not really.
So I want this tree in my backyard, and it's a wallaby pine. And so they decided to try to make money doing this. And, well,
so the government there, they started up a tree farm, and they planted tens of thousands of these trees.
Yeah, 52,000 wallaby pines. And what happened? Did the people buy them?
The dinosaurs came back.
The dinosaurs won.
Nobody wanted them. So what did they do with all those trees?
Well, they destroyed them.
Well, they're good liberals, right? Shouldn't they have just left them there?
At least left them or hugged them.
What's a tree hurting anybody? They destroyed 52,000 trees. And so it seems like people around the world just are not taking them all that seriously when they say, well, this was 65 million years ago, and it went extinct with the dinosaurs, and it left not a single trace anywhere in the world, and oh, look, it's still alive. Just like the coelacanth fish, and so many examples, hundreds of examples. Fred, it reminds me when the world doesn't really take them all that seriously about this being all these millions of years old and people don't want to buy it. It reminds me of when Christians sometimes claim things that are not really true, that people don't buy. I was at a church. In fact, I spoke at a good-sized church. I preached on a Sunday morning. And after the service, one of the elders said he was performing miracles at the church. And we went to dinner with the pastor and about a dozen of us, my wife, Cheryl. And he was saying that he performed a miracle after God did through him. And he stretched a woman's leg because her one leg was shorter than the other leg.
He stretched her leg.
That's what he said. And Fred, wow. I didn't believe it, you know. The Bible, when God does miracles, they're really miracles. So it turns out this lady, she never knew she had one leg shorter than the other. He had to tell her. And as he's telling the story of this miracle, the pastor says, could somebody pass the salad dressing? Could I get some blue cheese down here? It's like nobody was impressed. Because even though they're going along with it, they didn't really believe that it was a miracle.
Well, it was such a stretch.
You're funny, Fred. So when people don't buy into some claim, sometimes it's because intuitively they know that it doesn't have merit.
Yeah, and unfortunately, some people will buy into it, but, mm-hmm. you know, like
Right.
Finding Jesus' blood under the crucifix and
yeah,
some of those
stuff like
kooky
that.
Kooky claims.
Yeah. Hey, Fred, this thing about Mercury and that the lava flowed quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember we did on a Real Science Friday show the red color on the surface of Mars? Do you remember that show?
Yeah, I do.
Secular scientists are saying, hey, you know what? It wouldn't take millions of years. Mars can turn red pretty much overnight.
Yeah, we had a show on that.
Yeah, and same thing with coal forming rapidly and stalactites and oil. And when you mix bacteria in with mud, it hardens to rock like marble in only weeks, not millions of years or hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, so they look at structures and they say Mars had a global flood, and yet you know, you look at the features on Earth and they deny a global
right.
flood.
And so this is the pattern when they say, well, these things will take millions of years. And then the more you look at it and study, you find out, well, actually, that could take place in about 3 hours. So it's a lot of fun. And, Fred, we're almost out of time. But how about there's the back cover story of an alligator fossil compared to a living alligator?
Yeah, so they found an alligator fossil. If you look at the skull, and there's pictures on the magazine, you compare this alligator fossil skull to a modern alligator skull, and boy, they're so different, Bob.
They're extremely similar,
exactly,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And they're actually remarkable. You can't tell the difference between the two.
It's supposed to be 75 million years ago, and there's some difference, but look at a bulldog compared to a chihuahua, and look at their skulls. You
yeah.
have to kill them first or x-ray them, but they're so different, and yet they're the exact same species. We know they're the same species.
Yeah, you look at these, and it's very difficult to tell the difference. It reminds me of that huge crocodile they found that was bigger than any T-Rex we've ever found, mm-hmm. and it was supposedly 80 million years old,
yeah.
and it was exactly like a modern-day crocodile, just heck of a lot bigger.
Just bigger. And so, Fred, these here... Dr. Carl Werner did his tremendous DVD that we sell on living fossils here at Real Science Friday. Just click on the store and you could watch. He has two volumes. They're tremendous. But scientists who are evolutionists, they not only give it a different species name, you know, that scientific Latin name thing they got going on, they also give it a different genus name. So they give the false impression that there has been tremendous evolution from the time of the dinosaurs till now, but it's the same.
Yeah, they give it a different name. You know, they don't list the name here, but I'm sure it's something like Primitivicus alligatorus.
Yeah, Crocodilicus.
some illusionary name.
Yeah. Hey, you can't confuse your crocodiles with your alligators.
That's right, you can't.
That would be bad to do. Do you remember Ogden Nash? He did a poem on that, Professor Twist.
No.
I think I remember it.
Okay.
Now, this is from memory. I might get it wrong.
Okay.
I give you now Professor Twist, a conscientious scientist. Employees say he never bungles and sent him off to distant jungles. Camped on a tropic riverside, one day he missed his loving bride. She had, a guide informed him later, been eaten by an alligator.
Oh.
Professor Twist could not but smile. You mean, he said, a crocodile.
Okay.
Sorry, Fred. All right, that's Real Science Friday. Look forward to the list of not-so-old things.
Sounds
January.
Good, Bob. Thanks.
God bless you.
Marriage is the very foundation of human society, but it was God's idea to begin with. What is God's plan for your marriage? How can you know? What can you do to learn and grow with your spouse to honor God in your marriage? Pastor Bob Enyart covers this deeply personal and critically important topic in his teaching series, God's Plan for Marriage. Order by calling 800-8-ENYART or online at kgovstore.com.